Thank you, Kim. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And I don't need to tell anybody this. There is a definite opioid crisis out there. And Commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health, Dr. Julie Morita, is on with us right now. Hi, Dr. Morita. How are you?
Hi, Wendy. How are you?
I am just puzzled and confused. How do we fight this opioid crisis? What do we do here?
This is a nationwide problem, and we've been dealing with this for many years now. I think the health department has done a fantastic job. My staff have done a really great job in terms of getting access to information and data so we can really understand what's happening in the city of Chicago. Because there's been so much focus on prescription opioids or medications that are prescribed by healthcare providers. And so what we've done is we actually got the data from the medical examiner, and we're able to see that, you know, in Chicago, our problem, the people who are dying from overdoses are actually dying because of heroin and fentanyl-laced heroin or synthetic fentanyl, which is poisoning the heroin and then allowing people to die because it's more potent than natural heroin. So that's the problem in the city of Chicago, and it's affecting most of our neighborhoods. Though it's more of a problem in the south and the west sides, it's certainly affecting all of our neighborhoods.
Is it true that it begins with painkillers? I went out with some girlfriends last night. All of our kids are in high school and beyond, and one of the moms was telling me that her son came home and talked about these cocktails that these kids make that are, there's some alcohol in there, there's some codeine in there, and there is some kind of other painkiller or Xanax. I'm like, what are you? We would open up our can of beer, maybe underage and shouldn't, but they're mixing these things into drinks?
Right. So I think if you go back over time, at the same time that we saw the increased prescribing of opioids for pain management, we also saw this increase in opioid use disorders and overdose deaths. So at the same time doctors were prescribing more opioids for pain management, we also saw that more people were dying of overdoses. And the reason that happened is because about 20 years ago, there was a real focus on healthcare providers managing pain. And so it became the fifth vital sign. And so people were not supposed to have any pain, and healthcare providers were being educated to really manage pain as much as possible. And so these prescription opioids were prescribed, and individuals got addicted to these medications. I think the manufacturers themselves played a role in that because they didn't convey the risks associated with these medications, that there really is great addiction potential. And so as a result, when kids were getting their wisdom teeth pulled, or they had an ACL repaired, or they had another kind of minor surgery, they would get prescribed long courses of opioids, and then there might be medication left over, and people keep it in their cabinets, and so then kids would have access to them afterwards and potentially misuse them.
Julie, in the past, we've had Tim Ryan here on the program several times. Tim has had some heroin addiction problems himself and now has dedicated his life to helping people get away from heroin. He talks about the combination of that drug, heroin, being both affordable and accessible, and that's what's created the uptick in heroin abuse. That's what's going on here with the opioids, right?
Well, that is a component. Heroin is less expensive and it's accessible. And now what we're finding is this heroin is laced with other medications like this fentanyl or synthetic opioids, which makes them more potent and more likely to cause death. So the Department of Public Health over the past few years, and the mayor is intensely focused on this issue, have really ramped up our efforts to make sure that the things that we know work are available. So we know there's evidence to say that making medication-assisted treatment available to people will help decrease deaths. We also know that making sure that naloxone, which is a reversal agent, is available so that if individuals do overdose and their loved ones have naloxone, they can administer the naloxone and save a person's lives. And so over the past few years, the city has doubled our investment in treatment for substance use disorders, focused primarily in recent years on medication-assisted treatment for opioids, and then also made significant investments in making sure that naloxone is available. So with partners like the Chicago Recovery Alliance, we're making sure that people in the community have access to naloxone. All of our EMS responders have naloxone available, and then now in four districts in Chicago, we have police officers who have naloxone available to use for anybody who overdoses.
Is that a very expensive thing to have on hand?
It's not super expensive, and there's different forms of it. There's injectable forms and there's nasal forms of it, but it's definitely worth having available because by administering this medication, you can save a person's life. What happens with these opioids is the side effect is that it causes people to stop breathing, and if you stop breathing, you will die. The naloxone, if injected or if inhaled through the nose, will actually reverse the effect and people will start breathing again. So within a matter of a short period of time, people can have these overdoses reversed and their lives will be saved.
Although their lives will be saved, but their addiction won't be, and they need to get help. I was talking to someone I work with who is kind of against the naloxone, saying you're just going to continue their addiction. And I said, well, what if that person who overdosed was your child? You would do anything in your power to save this kid, and you do need to save them and bring them back to life, but you also have to help them get over that addiction or they will continue to use.
I think that's right. We know that public health approaches has approached various diseases in this way using harm reduction approaches, which means that for HIV transmission, what we do is we've done syringe exchanges, so basically giving people clean syringes if they have substance use disorders, and so they're not spreading HIV because they're sharing needles or syringes. The other thing that we do is we distribute condoms, and there's been always, with both types of interventions, there was this huge pushback saying, oh, by exchanging syringes or by providing condoms, we're just promoting bad behaviors. But that's not necessarily true. There have been numerous studies that have showed that these kinds of programs don't necessarily encourage or promote bad, dangerous behaviors. What they do is they actually just prevent the infection, HIV infections, prevent chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, prevent pregnancy. We're preventing diseases by making these things available, recognizing that people are doing these things already. And so the same goes for naloxone. We recognize there are people who are using opioids. We know that there will be people that overdose, and so we need to make sure that people are equipped to actually respond and administer the naloxone so they can save a life.
That's such an archaic way of thinking. Like, you know, I have two boys. I've talked to them about condoms. I'm certainly not giving them the go-ahead to have sex, but I think they need to know about it because it's proven a lot of these people do it anyway, so why not protect them in any way you can?
Right. It's any time that we have an intervention, there's always questions. It's interesting. You and I have talked about the HPV vaccine as well. That people are concerned that if you give the HPV vaccine, the kids will think they can go out and have sex more. But that also has not been proven to be true. Giving HPV vaccine prevents people from getting cervical cancer, head and neck cancer, throat cancer, and it does not increase their likelihood of having sex. And so we just have to keep open-mindedness, keep an open mind about these kinds of things and make sure that people have these kinds of services and these knowledge and these tools available to them.
We need to take a break, and there's a listener, Scott, who is, I hope you stay on hold because you need to talk to Dr. Julie Morita, Commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health, and we're talking about the opioid epidemic, which is everywhere and certainly here at home in Chicago. It's Bill, it's Wendy, 720 WGN.
Our guest is Dr. Julie Morita. Julie is the Commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health. We're talking about the opioid crisis. And Scott has a story. He knows this story. He knows this crisis all too well. Hi, Scott. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you guys for taking my call.
Sure.
Dr. Morita's here with you.
Hello.
Oh, thank you. Hello. I'm one of the boyfriends of someone who was on the TV show Intervention. And it seems like everyone's got a system, and they tolerate the drug more than try to help people. The help's not there, and everyone wants it. And there's just no help for them. That's what it seems like.
And I got to tell you, I don't, thank God heroin has not entered into our family at this point, and I hope it never does. But I can't imagine someone who does heroin is expecting or wanting to die. I can't imagine that. They want help, I would imagine, all the time. Dr. Morita, what do you think?
This is true. I think we know that individuals who have addictions to heroin and other opioids, when they overdose, it's a wake-up call. And so engaging with them shortly after something like that, we're often able to get them connected to healthcare services and to the treatment they actually need. What we see, the evidence actually shows that when that people need to overcome their addictions, they need to be on medications to actually help them wean themselves off of the heroin and the other opioids. And on top of that, there are other counseling services that are necessary. And so getting people connected to these services is critical. What's happened recently is that there are more and more healthcare providers who are becoming trained and capable of doing this kind of treatment. And so many of our public clinics, many of our healthcare systems and hospitals are expanding their capacity to make these kinds of services available because they recognize the need. Insurance companies cover these services, and there's a law that was passed a few years back requiring parity so that mental health and behavioral health services should be covered in the same way that physical health services are covered. So these services are covered, and then what the city has done is really increase our investment so that we can actually make funding available to individuals who don't have insurance so they can also accept these services and get these services. I think there's also an element of stigma. People are embarrassed about admitting that they have a substance use disorder. It's the same as with mental illness. People are embarrassed to say that they have depression or they have anxiety. And so we really have to work with the public to break that down and to say you shouldn't be embarrassed. If you have these problems, these are diseases just like diabetes, high blood pressure. If you have a substance use disorder, there is help available. Get the services and you can overcome it.
I want to tell you, Scott, about Tim Ryan, a man in recovery foundation. We'll get you. I'll find the website and tell you because that is someone who doesn't have insurance and needs help. He is a great resource and really, truly tries to help people. Good luck with your girlfriend, Scott.
Thank you.
Dr. Morita, I was telling Bill off the air briefly, I did have a knee replacement, and a doctor prescribes painkillers, and at some point I called to say, you know, I'm out of pain pills, and they said, how bad is your pain on a scale from 1 to 10? And I said, oh, probably a 2, and they're like, we're not renewing it, which is good. A surgeon does have to stop just automatically prescribing painkillers.
I think that's right. I think, and that's what healthcare providers are much more aware of that now. We've learned from that fifth vital sign era where we felt like no pain was what the goal was, that we really can't have that, and that there are actually alternatives to opioids for controlling pain. There's things like non-steroidals like ibuprofen or Motrin, acetaminophen or Tylenol, those kinds of things help control pain. We also know that yoga and physical therapy and meditation can also help with pain as well. And so there's alternative modes of therapy that can help complement recovery so that you don't actually have to use opioids regularly or for prolonged periods of time.
Even acupuncture works.
Oh, yeah?
That's right. There are studies that show that acupuncture can help with pain as well.
Where do we stand nationally, would you say, Julie? How does Chicago hold up against the rest of the nation in terms of this crisis?
I think we're different than the rest of the nation in that in some parts of the country, in rural areas and suburban areas, it really is more prescription opioids that are causing the problem. In Chicago and other urban areas, what we're seeing is more heroin and then fentanyl-laced heroin contributing to the overdose deaths. And so the epidemic is a little bit different in the city of Chicago. We're also seeing the age group is a little bit different in Chicago, where it's a younger population in rural and more suburban areas. What we're seeing is the 50% of the people who had overdoses were between the ages of 45 and 64 in Chicago, so it's an older age group. So our epidemic is a little bit different than other parts of the U.S., but it's still a huge problem throughout the United States.
I don't want to badmouth Naperville, but anytime this discussion comes up, Naperville is mentioned. What's going on in Naperville that's making it so bad?
You know, I don't know the data from Naperville that well. I know the data in Chicago better than anything, and I think, like I said, in all parts of the United States, we're suffering from this epidemic, and that we actually need to coordinate our efforts. We're using a comprehensive approach. The city has done some very strategic things in terms of suing pharmaceutical companies in 2014 for marketing their medications irresponsibly. We also just announced that we're suing three of the largest distributors last week because they play a role in identifying places that are ordering too much of the opioids and actually reporting them or withholding additional medication to them. And we don't feel like they did a good job with that. So there's a city suing them. We've done a whole bunch of healthcare provider education to make sure providers are prescribing responsibly. And then also a group of providers that are very motivated and want to do this medication-assisted treatment, that they're actually getting technical assistance to help them to be successful in that work and be able to increase the services that are available.
I have heard this statistic, and I have to be honest with you. I have told people this statistic, and I'd like to go. I'd like you to tell me if this is true. I've heard that it's much easier for kids to score some heroin than it is to actually buy alcohol underage. Is that true or false?
I don't actually know that as a fact. I don't have that information. So,
all right, because I have heard that from people. Not saying you should drop the drinking age back to 18, but it does seem that it's harder to do everything. And I can't believe heroin can be scored very easily. I'm still pretty naive about that. I'm like, I wouldn't even know where to go to get it.
Yeah, I think alcohol is still a problem. I mean, because we're really focusing and talking about heroin and prescription opioid use disorders, alcohol is a major problem as well. We know particularly at events, these large events like Lollapalooza, there's a lot of kids that end up in the emergency rooms with alcohol poisoning because they're just consuming way too much. Binge drinking in the United States is a problem. And so I wouldn't say that the alcohol problem is not there. It is there. What we're seeing is this dramatic increase in opioid use disorders and opioid overdoses that's really triggering all of our activity right now. But there is a need to keep our eyes and ears open related to alcohol use disorders as well.
Is there any good news in all this, Julie? Just give us one little tidbit of good news. Is there some?
I mean, I think there's a great... The healthcare system definitely recognizes their role in helping with this problem in terms of working with encouraging healthcare providers to prescribe responsibly, increasing commitments and investments to make services available, like medication-assisted treatment services available. We are coordinating really, really well with first responders, so police and fire are able to equip to do reversal. I think the other thing is we're seeing that the pharmaceutical companies, five of the major pharmaceutical companies were sued in 2014. It's now morphed into a multi-jurisdiction lawsuit. But Purdue Pharma, which actually creates OxyContin, actually has made a commitment earlier this year to not market their products to healthcare providers. That's a major step in the right direction because part of why healthcare providers were prescribing these medications so liberally is because they didn't believe it or know and understand the risks associated with them. And so the manufacturer stepping back and saying, okay, we're just not going to market our product to healthcare providers really helps with this situation. So we didn't get here overnight, and we're not going to get out of this situation overnight, but we need to work together. And what I'm seeing us do in this jurisdiction and other places is that we're working together in a coordinated way to help prevent substance use disorder, but also to make treatment available for those who already have it. One of the things I didn't mention and I want to mention, too, is that we also have a website called overcomeopioids.com where individuals can understand about the disease. We also have a website that makes services, makes available online services for people or places where people can go to get services. It's called ChicagoConnects.org. So if people go to that website, they can actually put in their jurisdiction where they live and find services that are nearby. So our goal is really to help raise awareness, destigmatize, and make sure people know where services are available.
Overcomeopioids.com and ChicagoConnects.org. Dr. Julie Morita, she's Commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health. Thank you so much for talking to us about this.
Thank you.
All right, a quick break. We'll check in with Steve, find out what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. That's next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.